The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Look, there is no doubt that Michael Jordan isn't the greatest college basketball player of all time. But who is? I'll give you the top five college basketball players of all time. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests are at 888-729-3776 on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Coming up on today's show, everybody needs a second chance, and everybody wants a story of redemption and hope. I have one for you, as delivered by America's Team. I'm Will Cain. Our Supreme Leader Nuno is running the show. Pat is on the board and Bubba's riding shotgun today, and the bickering led right us up to kickoff. We have a segment here, and one of the biggest potholes, one of the biggest landmines, one of the biggest question marks in this segment will not be who are my top five college basketball players of all time, but what will happen when I toss it to various guys on the show. There's a lot of harumphing, a lot of stuttering, some typing and complaints about memory, and even a statement that was uttered that sounded like this. Do you know how hard it is right now? I have no idea what that was even referenced to, but I know it could be a little dicey as we move forward here on the Will Cain Show. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. As determined by a fan vote on ESPN.com, Michael Jordan is the greatest college basketball player of all time. In a field of 64, visitors to ESPN.com winnowed it down to a championship final between Larry Bird and Michael Jordan, and they crowned Michael Jordan the champion. ESPN's college basketball analyst Jay Billis went on SportsCenter, and as someone who competed against Jordan, he wanted to tell you exactly what it was like back in college.
But it's clear from the bracketing and the voting that if you didn't appear in Xbox games, you had no chance of advancing. Walton not advancing is really hard to imagine. Same thing with Alcindor.
Billis has a column up at ESPN.com as well explaining how difficult it was to play against Jordan. Billis being a Dukie and Jordan going to North Carolina. But neither Michael Jordan nor his adversary in the finals, Larry Bird, are even in the top five college basketball players of all time. As Billis hints at there, it's heavily weighted towards people who might not have seen some of the greatest college basketball players of all time play a single minute. But I'll give you my top five. I'll tell you exactly how it shakes out. One quick caveat. While ESPN.com's field included women's college basketball players, I am wholly unqualified to assess the merits of Sabrina Ionescu or Diana Taurasi as compared against those of Bill Russell. I am wholly unqualified to include the greatest of the women's game because I haven't paid that much attention to the women's game. But don't let that make you think I've given it short shrift, because I maintain here on the Will Cain Show a women's college basketball correspondent. He goes by the name of Pat. And before we lay out our top five, I will give Pat an opportunity to tell me who I am in the process of offending. Take it away, Pat.
Breonna Stewart's the greatest women's basketball player of all time, so she'd be the one that you'd want on your list. But
And where would you put her? Is she in the top five best college basketball players of all time? Whoever I'm about to list, how high should she have gone, and who should she be above?
I would have probably put her at like five, considering what I know your list to be. I probably would have had her in the five spot. Four-time national champion, four-time NCAA tournament, most outstanding players. Pretty good.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, I think we've crossed the first pothole. We've crossed the first hurdle. We have successfully tossed it to one of our correspondents, and he, despite his belly aching and complaining before the show, was actually able to execute his job. Because, Bubba, what was Pat's complaint before? That he actually wasn't an expert and he doesn't watch women's college basketball? Was that what it was, Bubba?
He's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know any of these women's players. I don't watch these games. I don't know. What are you talking about?
Well, you guys act like I sit around just like watching highlight film of women's college hoops. Like, I have a very baseline knowledge of
You've
it at all.
You've gone to a Connecticut Sun game.
It was for Gino Auriemma's 1,000th win. It's historic.
He coaches UConn, not the Connecticut Sun. So you've gone to both games.
I never went to a Connecticut Sun game.
I don't know why you're so defensive. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just clear that what you've laid out for us is that you're more of a WNBA fan than a women's college basketball fan. And that's fine. But we appreciate you including Breonna Stewart into this discussion, because anyone who's won four national championships deserves to be. Unfortunately, that's just one hurdle we'll be crossing in this segment. There are other potholes or sketchy moments. They don't include Pat. I'm more nervous about my next correspondent. But with no further ado, your top five college basketball players of all time. A list that does not include Michael Jordan. At number five, a two-time national champion, a guy who has hit at least three game-winning shots in a single tournament, I believe it was, 4 years at Duke. Most recent entry on this entire list, at number five, it's Christian Laettner. Christian Laettner was one hell of a college basketball player. I think it's fair to say for anyone who watched college basketball from the 80s and 90s on, he's the best college basketball player we have ever seen. He dominated when it mattered. He dominated in the tournament. Whether or not I got exactly the right stats and when he hit his game-winning shots, we just got used to seeing him hitting impossible game-winning shots. He was hated. He was reviled. And they did a 30-for-30 on it called I Hate Christian Laettner. But you have to respect the college basketball player that Laettner was. Absolutely phenomenal. At number four, the Big O, Oscar Robertson, Cincinnati. In the late 1950s, he played three seasons. He averaged almost 34 points a game. He was a three-time College Player of the Year, three-time first-team All-American. Oscar Robertson didn't win it all, but he dominated in almost everything he could control. Before I move on, let's see how it's going to go. Let me go to my college basketball bracket correspondent. Let me go to our Supreme Leader. Let me go to Kim Jong-Nuno. Nuno, where did Laettner and Robertson fall by the wayside? Where did they go in this 64-person bracket?
Christian Laettner lost in the round of 32 to Zion Williamson. And then Oscar lost in the Sweet 16 to Dwayne Wade.
To Dwayne Wade. Okay. It is, as Bill has said, only if you played in a video game on Xbox were you eligible for this list, but not in Will Cain's five best college basketball players of all time. Laettner five, Robertson four, and coming in at number three, a player from the late 60s, Pistol Pete Maravich, LSU. Let me give you his points per game average in three seasons at LSU. 43.8, 44.2, 44.5. He averaged over 44 points for his collegiate career. Bubba, who did some background research on this, said they've gone back and they've analyzed where his shots came from, because these stats are before the three-point line. If there had been a three-point line, Maravich would have averaged over 50 points a game. He's a three-time first-team All-American and a two-time College Player of the Year. Pistol Pete Maravich, number two. I'm sorry, number three. And then there is number two. It's Bill Walton. Bill Walton, in 3 years at UCLA, had four losses. Two-time champion, two-time Final Four MVP, three-time College Player of the Year, and first-team All-American. Bill Walton averaged 20 points and 15 rebounds and dominated college basketball when he played. Let me go back to my bracket correspondent, Supreme Leader, Kim Jong-Nuno. Where did Pistol Pete and Bill Walton go out in these brackets?
They both went out in the round, in the Sweet 16. Pistol Pete went out to Allen Iverson, and Bill Walton went out to Steph Curry.
It's absolutely insane. Steph Curry at Dayton, better than Bill Walton at UCLA. And Allen Iverson was a phenomenal college basketball player, but Pistol Pete is the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history. And that brings us to the undisputed number one college basketball player of all time. I don't know how it's a debate. And I don't know how Michael Jordan secured the victory. Because to do so, it would have meant he beat, surpassed, or beat someone who beat or surpassed Lou Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, UCLA. 3 years, only two losses. In those 3 years, he won three national championships, the Final Four MVP all 3 years, College Player of the Year all 3 years, and First Team All-American all 3 years. They outlawed the dunk because of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. 26 points, almost 16 rebounds a game. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the definition of college basketball dominance, and he is the greatest college basketball player of all time. One more time, back to our bracket correspondent. Nuno, where did Lou Alcindor go out?
He lost to Shaq, also in the Sweet 16.
Insane. It's not Michael Jordan. It's Lou Alcindor. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's the greatest college basketball player of all time. And that's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. What people neglect to understand is, A, time extends pre-1990, and also it's exclusively about their collegiate career. It's not who they turned into. It reminds me of a debate that broke out on Twitter the other day. Who would you bench, who would you start, and who would you cut? Vince Young, Johnny Manziel, and Patrick Mahomes. Who would you bench, who would you start, who would you cut? The answer's pretty obvious. If you realize the game, which is limited to their collegiate careers, limiting college basketball to those years exclusively, while in college, it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Coming up, a ray of hope, a story of redemption, provided to you by the Dallas Cowboys. Plus, let's play the game. Bench, start, cut. Mahomes, Vince Young, Johnny Manziel, just on their collegiate careers. That's coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The Dallas Cowboys make a high-risk signing. They just signed a dude that hadn't played football in 4 years before they gave Dak Prescott a long-term deal. And yet somehow everybody misreads what this actually means. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'll get to the redemption story just offered to us by America's Team in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. But first, who's the greatest college basketball player of all time? It's not Michael Jordan. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But Logan in South Carolina says there's another name we're not mentioning. What's up, Logan?
What's up, Will? Hey, man, I feel like you are forgetting the greatest of all time, in my opinion, which is Mr. J.J. Redick. So,
how does J.J. Redick have a claim to the greatest college basketball player of all time over guys like Bill Walton, Pistol Pete Maravich, and Lou Alcindor?
Okay, that's a fair point. I didn't necessarily say greatest of all time. You forgot him in your top five, though.
Which one of those guys? Which one of those guys, or Christian Laettner, or Oscar Robertson, would you boot out for J.J. Redick?
I'm a huge Duke guy, and honestly, I don't even think Laettner deserves to be in there above J.J. J.J. was a whole new kind of player. The kid could jump from, like, jack from anywhere, and he could actually get to the rim as well.
Logan, did you ever see Laettner play?
Too young for that, you're right.
Well, I'm not just going to blame it on your age. I'm going to blame it on your naivety. I don't know how you got there, but you are wrong. I appreciate the call, Logan. How about Al from Pennsylvania? What's up? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, if that was your own personal list, I love that list. The only thing is, in my opinion, Pistol Pete was the most entertaining basketball player I have ever seen. I mean, I was in junior high school when Pistol Pete was in college, and Pistol Pete turned me on to watching college basketball. And from what I can remember, as a pure shooter, he was Steph Curry before Steph Curry was. As a playmaker, he was Magic Johnson before Magic Johnson was. I mean, there wasn't anything the guy couldn't do. I mean, his behind the back passes, his blind passes, his between the leg dribbling and everything. I mean, and he could shoot lights out. Like you said, if there was a three point line back then, he would have averaged 50 points a game easily. He was the most entertaining basketball player I've ever seen.
Yep, I got you, Al. I appreciate the call. Opposite ends of the spectrum there. One telling us that a guy he saw, oh, some odd 50 years ago is the best college basketball player of all time, and one telling us that we're forgetting J.J. Redick is the college basketball top five player of all time. Either way, what we realize is Michael Jordan is not. In fact, one could argue Michael Jordan's not the greatest North Carolina player of all time. Tyler Hansbrough, in his time in North Carolina, might just have accomplished more and have a better claim to that title than Michael Jordan. He won a national championship, as did Jordan. He was College Player of the Year, as was Jordan. He was a three-time first-team All-American. And he is UNC's all-time leading scorer. That's Tyler Hansbrough. I mentioned the game, bench, start, cut. This was on Twitter the other day, and the person that brought it to light was actually Patrick Mahomes, because the three names given were Mahomes, Vince Young, and Johnny Manziel, based exclusively on their, I believe, high school and college careers. Who would you start, who would you bench, and who would you cut? Mahomes tweeted it out and said, "I think I'm getting cut here, fellas." And that only serves to highlight the whole point, is we're limiting this to a certain time frame, a certain set of parameters, which is, how did you play before you got to the pros? That's what keeps Michael Jordan from reaching number one on this list. No matter if he's the greatest NBA player of all time, and he is, that doesn't make him the greatest college basketball player of all time, which he isn't, and he's not even the top five. And for the record, it would go like this. Mahomes would get cut, Manziel would get benched, and Vince Young would get the start. I have generally been opposed to this I want to watch old sports phenomenon we're doing during this coronavirus pandemic. I just can't get into something I've already seen. But I figured the key out tonight on ESPN. It is the 2005 Rose Bowl, the 2005 National Championship game. It is Texas versus USC. And I have been spending the last 24 hours building it up for my sons, who've never seen it. I won't tell them who won the game, although it doesn't take much to figure it out. If Daddy's excited about it, the Longhorns must have won. But I've been telling them who VY was, and Matt Leinart, and Reggie Bush. I've been building it all up as the greatest college football game in history, which it was. And now we're all going to sit around tonight and watch the 2005 Rose Bowl. And now I'm pumped. I can go back in with a fresh set of eyes. They're just not my eyes. So I get to experience it all again through their first time. Story of redemption, a story of a second chance, a really honestly heartwarming story layered on top of, once again, a story of risk tolerance, of a wildcatter who's always looking for value and the ability to hit a home run. The Dallas Cowboys signed Aldon Smith to a contract. Aldon Smith, who played for the San Francisco 49ers and hasn't played football in 4 years because he's been riddled with troubles, DUIs, alcoholism, substance abuse, domestic violence. But the story goes that Aldon Smith has got his life together. He's been clean for 9 months. And Jerry Jones is ready to take a risk on a guy who had 42 sacks in the first three seasons of his career. But Trey Wingo on Golic and Wingo sees it as something else. Mistaken priorities. Listen.
If they're being so cost conscious as they try and work out this long-term deal with Dak Prescott, if I'm Dak Prescott's agent, I'm saying, wait a minute. Look at what my player has done. Look at the things and how he has represented the organization. And you're willing to give this guy that amount of money based on his track record? What are you doing? And I understand it's a pittance compared to what we're talking about with Dak Prescott. But there is a reality of perception. And if you're Dak Prescott, you have now, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you have signed a running back who's been suspended and held out. You have signed an inside linebacker in Jalen Smith, who's been great. I understand that, but inside linebackers ain't exactly the currency of what's most important in the NFL right now. You've signed a right tackle, and then you have gone out of your way to either outbid someone else or outbid yourself for Alden Smith before you take care of your franchise quarterback. I mean, I'll give the Cowboys this. They are on brand. They have reverse engineered this thing with Dak Prescott from the beginning, and they are continuing to work bass ackwards on this in a way that I cannot understand.
I totally disagree with Trey Wingo from Golic and Wingo. I do agree that often life is about perception and life can be emotional. And if you look at things like, wow, that's where your priorities are, that's who you give attention to, that's who you prioritize, but not me, it can have a real effect. Trust me. Trust me. I understand the role that can play. But the problem here is one has nothing to do with the other. Alden Smith has nothing to do with Dak Prescott. I'll explain that, and I'll even get into a debate about it with our buddy Tim Hasselbeck next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The Dallas Cowboys gave Alden Smith a contract 4 years out of football. I see that as a story of redemption and second chances. I see that as a story of an oil wildcatter once again bellying up to the table for another shot of risk tolerance. Others see it as jacked up priorities. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. Reminding you can listen to the show on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN Radio, or you can ask for your local ESPN radio station by name. I know somebody that disagrees with me about that is ESPN football analyst Tim Hasselbeck, who's on our phone lines. What's up, Timmy?
Hey, Will, what do you mean I disagree with you on that?
Well, first, I played a good sound, a good chunk of sound from your good buddy Trey Wingo, and he thinks it's Cowboys having mistaken priorities and, you know, telling Dak we have other things. And then I heard from a birdie that you agreed with that this morning.
Well, no, listen, I agree with the fact that Dak can look at that and be like, hey, what's going on? But I also think that, like, in order to pay your starting quarterback $40 million a year or in that ballpark, one of the ways that you can be successful doing that is beating the market in other areas. And one of the ways you beat the market in other areas is you sign a guy that's been out of the league for 5 years that, you know, for $4 million in hopes that he can give you 12 sacks. You know, like that would be a bargain. So, yeah, I think you take a risk. I think a move like this, assuming that Alden Smith is the guy he was 5 years ago, which is a massive if. I think in some ways, you know, helps you get it done. But, you know, I guess my point with Wingo was more along the lines of, like, if you're Dak and you're seeing Alden Smith make $4 million when you've made $5 million total from the team in your time as a starter and you've got 40 wins, like, at some point you're like, okay, hey, listen, I get it, but, like, let's do the right thing, like, you can do my deal and then sign Alden Smith, like beat the market after you sign my deal. Like both of those things can be true.
Definitely. You said a lot of things I want to work through here. First, yes, what you're basically pointing out is the emotional component to a negotiation. We all do it. Look, let's be real. I see deals that other people sign. I'm like, well, what does that mean? And why, when that one happened and why at that level? And then what about, you know, I can do the math and I understand all that. As for Alden Smith specifically, really quickly, it's not, I mean, nothing's guaranteed. Like $0 are guaranteed of that $4 million. It's a $2 million base, $2 million incentives, and if he's not, you know, rehabilitated and a good citizen or even makes the team, he doesn't get a thing. I don't think his week-to-week paycheck is even guaranteed in any way. So I don't think the Cowboys have done anything in any way that takes away from Dak other than whatever it does to him emotionally, right? Because that wasn't $4 million. It's not any dollar that would have been earmarked for Dak Prescott.
No, of course it wasn't. But you're right. It's the emotional. It's why when someone gets a deal that ever, or, well, I'll give you an example. You look at what the Titans are doing right now. The Titans, you know, sign Ryan Tannehill. And then they, you know, place the franchise tag on Derrick Henry. He's going to sign it. Both, you know, sides are basically saying, like, hey, he wants to be there. The team wants him. And they're going to try to really be earnest about trying to work on a long-term deal. That is sending the message internally that, like, hey, you produce here, we're going to reward you. And, you know, so you're calling it emotions in a contract, but, like, I also do think you have to consider, like, the bigger whole of, like, what it means for your organization and the culture in your organization about, like, what people feel like. Like, if you feel like you're valued in your organization and you're going to be rewarded for your work, then it's going to, at least it should create a culture where other people desire to perform for that organization in hopes of then seeing the rewards in that same organization.
I'm 100% with you on that. Yes, it's not just emotional. It says what an organization's priorities are, meaning what do they value? What do they make important? I get it. I've experienced it, man. It's not what it is in the end. It's what you're saying to me. It's not even just about you. Like, it's not just about Dak. It more says, like, this organization believes these things are important, right? And they go out and make sure those things happen. And then they hope. Doesn't mean they don't hope or want something to happen with Dak or these other things as well, but they just kind of reveal their hand. I want to move on from this.
And I think, well, let's just be honest too. Let me first preface this by saying, like, look, I hope Alden Smith, like, I hope there's, like, an awesome story. Like, I hope it's a story that's good enough to be a movie one day where, you know, it's like, look at the redemption and look at, you know, what he did with his second chance and how his life has turned around. Like, I hope that that's the case. But you also have to consider that, like, you know, there are other players on the team. You know, we're relating this to, you know, just specifically to Dak, but, like, if your other players on the team who have not been in trouble off the field and you're looking around that would love a 1-year $4 million deal, and maybe you're, you know, good enough
what message
to
you just send to them? Yes.
Yeah, what kind of message is to them? Like, wait a second, this dude's been out of football for 5 years and, like, you're rewarding him right now when we're, like, shut down? I mean, like, how does that feel?
Well, because I find this so fascinating, because it's less about Alden Smith and less about the Cowboys, it's about so many other business decisions. There's two other angles to this that I like. One, I generally like Jerry's, you know, approach to things, which is, you know, high risk, high reward. Although I don't know if the risk is that high with Alden Smith. It's just more like Jerry looks for hidden gems, and he has. It's I can't even remember all the names. It was Greg Hardy. He's done it so many times where it's a buy low proposition and hope that the guy has his act together. I think it's a good idea to do that, generally. I think that kind of approach is good. And then on the second hand, to Alden, look, Tim, you and I are friends. We haven't really gotten to this level of our friendship to talk about it, but we've all had experiences. I would imagine everybody listening with somebody who's had some addiction issues, right? And you want to grant second chances. And it's big, the whole redemption thing. But you also realize there is a bridge you cross or you get to where you're like, I'm not helping you or me anymore. Like, you have to deal with this. It's not always about me giving another chance. It's your thing. And maybe that's where Alden Smith is now, right? After 4 years and 9 months being clean. But I do realize at some point it's like, you know, you've gotten all the chances you can get.
Yeah, that's part of it. Look, I have, like, Josh Gordon, I really was, you know, I mean, I remember, I think E60 did a piece on him, and, like, it was hard to watch the piece and not be like, man, I really want to see this work out for Josh Gordon. And, you know, then you see him kind of, you know, get opportunities, and you think, you know, okay, here he is in New England, maybe this is going to work out. And then, like, nope, like, here you go. So what I'm saying is, and I think we are in agreement on this, is that, you know, it just is, even if you're somebody that, you know, believes in second chances and believe that Alden Smith should get another opportunity and all of that, if you're a member of the Cowboys who has, you know, has distanced yourself from certain friends, has removed yourself from certain environments, and, you know, is, you know, maybe less of a player as he was, you know, at the top of his game, you're still looking around like, well, really, like, do you care about the fact that, like, I've been doing the right thing for this organization?
Right. I get 100% know what you're talking about. All too well, Tim. And then you also get entranced, by the way, 42 sacks in 3 years. But Alden Smith was really, really good. I'm talking about every bit as good as J.J. Watt those first three years, right? In fact, I think if you look at the first 3 years of anyone's career, Aldon Smith's name is next to Reggie White and Derek Thomas. Those are the only dudes whose first 3 years were better. And by the way, White came in as like a 24-year-old who'd played some years in the USFL. So it's really just Derek Thomas and Aldon Smith who were that awesome their first 3 years.
Yeah, I think the sack percentages, the crew that he is with is why you sign somebody that's been out of the league for 5 years. And obviously Jim Tomsula, you know, being the defensive line coach, having a history with him, that matters, especially this time of year when you obviously, aren't able to do a person, in-person kind of interview and visit with somebody. So that's going to make a difference. And then, look, I mean, you said it about Jerry. I mean, like, Greg Hardy was a really unpopular signing. And, the production didn't end up, working out for the Cowboys. But, they kind of had to deal with some uncomfortable situations and, in PR and things like that. But Jerry got through it. And so now signing, somebody like Aldon Smith with his history and the upside of Aldon Smith, for the deal. And let's be honest, too. And this is something that, came up on Golic and Wingo as well. If you signed a 1 year, $4 million deal, like, doesn't that lead you to believe that somebody else was interested? Because if nobody else was interested, it's probably a 1 year league minimum deal or a 2 year minimum deal.
Maybe somebody else was. I don't know. Now they have Aldon Smith and Randy Gregory. We'll call it like their second or third chance in position. Tim Hasselbeck's here on the Will Cain Show. He's going to hang out. I want to ask him this because I think he's going to have a little bit of a surprising answer. Tua or Burrow? That's all coming up with Tim Hasselbeck on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Coming at you with a little easy listening on ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting, home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy, all online at progressive.com. It's the Will Cain Show coming at you late at night, keeping you feeling sexy as you head into your sports weekend. Still hanging out with Tim Hasselbeck on the phone lines. You know, you inspired me at the Super Bowl. I've looked back on that weekend, by the way. I had a buddy call me who I was hanging out. You met my friend down there at the Super Bowl. He goes, did you read that report that coronavirus might have been floating around at the Super Bowl? Everybody in Miami trading around. I said, yeah, they keep backing up the clock, but that would have been a bad scenario if all those people I was shaking hands with in Miami were coronavirused up. But you inspired me, man. I saw you walking around the pool with those slip-on Vans, and I've always been a Vans lover. You know, it's cowboy boots or Vans. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I bought some. Yeah, after I saw you looking good in them, I was like, I might get some slip-on Vans.
I mean, most people don't think of it, but, bald guys in their 40s, trendsetters, I mean, just to be honest.
No, I don't know if Elizabeth picked it out or not, but your poolside wear was sharp. Some slip-on Vans.
Really?
I think you had some linen pants,
I mean,
maybe.
Don't be fooled by the uptight, middle-age, accountant look that I sport on camera,
Yeah.
Much cooler off air.
Oh, no. I know you're very edgy. I'm aware of that. Tim Hasselbeck here on the Will Cain Show. I heard you were asked this, and the answer is somewhat surprising. You're drafting. I don't know what position to put you in. Maybe I guess I put you number one overall. Mm-hmm. And you get the choice, Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa. Which way do you go?
No, I'm taking Burrow right now. But the question, and maybe you're alluding to this, is like if you could take health out of it, you look at what Tua did in two seasons, as the starter, and then you look at kind of how he came on the scene. In fact, they, came in and took a job based on kind of what he would do day in and day out and, what he had shown as a passer, took a job away from a really accomplished quarterback, a guy that's going to get drafted, to play the quarterback position most likely, in this year's draft. Like, if you could take the injury situation out of it, he's a really special player in terms of, how good he was. You go look at his first year as a starter and just, the kind of the ball location and accuracy that we're so enamored with Joe Burrow, you could see a lot of that in Tua's first year as the starter. I mean, their efficiency passing the football and some of the throws that he would make in terms of, you know, stuff down the field, not stuff just like at the line of scrimmage, but stuff down the field. You know, I just, your body of work is a little bit bigger. And so, you know, while Burrow's year this season was so remarkable, you know, I think when you have two remarkable seasons, you know, that to me would mean more.
What about your anti-lefty bias? In the hallways, you're always telling me what you think about lefty quarterbacks. And
True. I mean, I did. I was teammates with Mark Brunell, and I will tell you, like, I don't even know how people coached him. You know, I mean, it's just it just doesn't even look right.
I think my aunt growing up, or it was my grandma, somebody in my family, or it was my best buddy's mom, was like, if you're left-handed, then you're just not right. There's just something wrong with you.
I will tell you this, and this does happen. You know, if you have an older coach, a coach that's been, you know, used to calling plays, and this did happen when I was with the Redskins and Brunell was a starter, you kind of get into, like, some of these frantic situations, and a play comes in from the sideline from a coach that, like, just has it ingrained in his head to call things a certain way. Like, I'll never forget, we had a third and, like, 18 against Chicago. And, you know, we basically are rolling Brunell out to his right. Like, the call goes in to him. And he, like, I'm standing down the sidelines. He looks over at me, like, shakes his hands and, like, puts his arms up. Like, do we not know that I'm a lefty? You
know? Hey, we did this on the show, Tim, a few weeks ago. You know, the stats are really weird. Like, there's so few. The number of lefty quarterbacks in the NFL does not measure up to the number of lefties in society. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's disproportionate. There's not enough. I mean, there's lefty pitchers, obviously. So why so many lefty quarterbacks don't make it to the NFL? There should be more, is the point.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure. You know, because you just obviously there's been guys that have had success. I mean, you think Steve Young and you think Michael Vick. I mean, there's lefties that have had Boomer Esiason. I mean, there's plenty of lefties that have had success.
Yeah, and, right.
You know, I do think that there is something to, you know, one guy plays the position. It's not like you know, a receiver group or an offensive line group. And so you're choosing one guy. And, you know, it was probably a period of time where it just was, it was strange to have a left-handed quarterback. I mean,
just a bunch of people saying that boy ain't right.
A little bit, especially down where you're from, Will.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. That boy just ain't right. He uses his wrong hand. You ever notice that? All right. Tim Hasselbeck here on the Will Cain Show. I appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you.
All right, see you, Will.
All right. The other day, I got to sit down with Wade Phillips, who is fascinating. More head coaching jobs than anybody in the history of the league. I had a long interview with Wade Phillips. You get to hear some of it next in the Will Cain Show.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.